Hello, my name is Kieran Tatham, and welcome to the Football Spotlight, a podcast shining a light on those with intriguing stories from the women's game. On this episode, I speak with North Carolina Courage forward and US Women's National Team legend, Heather O'Reilly. I speak to her about her career coming full circle, having started out at the University of North Carolina and returning home to play for the Courage, with the move coming after her 18-month spell in England with Arsenal FC. We also spoke about the recent ICC Women's Championship and the goal that Heyo scored against Lyon, as well as her hopes to see the competition expanded. As with all these podcasts, I opened up by asking Heyo how she has dealt with being in the spotlight during her career and whether she has been comfortable with it. In typical fashion, she was engaging and incredibly insightful, so sit back, relax, and enjoy my chat with Heather O'Reilly.
Don't mind being in the spotlight, I would say. I feel like I am a fairly outgoing person. I've always viewed it as a positive. In terms of a lot of eyeballs on you means that you can have a lot of influence, do a lot of good and cool things with influence. I think that that's a responsibility and an opportunity for that athletes have. Obviously, you know, more people that know your name and know what you're all about, you know, you all of a sudden have credibility, so you can, you know, try to make the world a better place. So I think that that's obviously the spotlight positives. Sometimes in terms of expectations that people have for you, a lot of times you are expected to carry your teams, or you're expected to score, or you're expected to have success. And I think that that is difficult for athletes sometimes to carry that burden a lot, but that's what sort of separates the elite from the non-elites, is the ability to sort of deal with that pressure and deal with that responsibility year in, year out. So yeah, I would say that generally overall I like it. I think that, you know, there's a spectrum of fame in women's football that is interesting. I think, you know, it's maybe something that people don't really understand. We can go from one week being on stage with Taylor Swift and having a ticker tape parade in New York City to the next week being in a club environment with 500 people in the stands and nobody really, you know, knowing that you have a game. So the spectrum of spotlight, I think, in women's football is a broad one and is an interesting one, depending on if you're talking about international soccer, if you're talking about club football, or if you're talking about a superstar like Alex Morgan compared to, you know, maybe a player in the NWSL that is struggling to make roster. So there's a little bit of a spectrum there, and I've been fortunate to be able to have said that I've seen a lot of sides of that spectrum in terms of fame, in terms of accomplishments, and in terms of being close with a lot of the best players in the world and seeing how they function in those environments.
But that's been the case for a long time in the United States, hasn't it? And it's not necessarily the case in other countries. Now, we're going to talk about your time at Arsenal in a bit, but when you came over here, how different was it? Because in the United States, you can probably walk down a lot of streets and there's a good chance you're going to be recognised. How different was it in London, where, with the greatest respect, you could probably walk around and you don't need to put sunglasses on to disguise yourself, for example, if you want to go and grab a coffee? How did you find that change, and how did you adjust?
Well, I think that, like I said, it is an interesting one for women's football. I mean, it's not like many of us, maybe minus Mia Hamm, Abby Wambach, and Alex Morgan, and potentially now Carly Lloyd and Megan Rapinoe, are perhaps, you know, the most visible in terms of female footballers that might get stopped in America. But, you know, women's football is still not even at that, you know, stage here in the U.S. So I would say that, yeah, England did feel like even a little bit farther behind in terms of knowing the players and things like that. But on the flip side, I think that people have a lot of respect for Arsenal as a brand. It's obviously one of the greatest brands of global football in general. So, you know, even though they didn't know me as a player, for them to hear that I was part of Arsenal or wear my Arsenal kit around to the coffee shop would definitely draw some attention. Whereas perhaps if you're wearing a, you know, North Carolina Courage jacket, maybe people wouldn't have that same kind of that sort of awe. So I think there's both sides of it. I think brand recognition is still bigger in England with the clubs such as Manchester City, Arsenal, Chelsea. A lot of the big clubs in Europe are doing a fantastic job adding their women's side, and they already have a great foundation already. So they're certainly kind of a leg up in that regard.
Well, you were in the spotlight, in the public eye, recently because you decided to end your time in England, and we'll talk about that shortly. But you are back home. Your career has come full circle. You started off as a Tar Heel back in the early 2000s. You are now back in North Carolina with the Courage. Tell us how that's going, how the adjustment has been, how it's been being home, and let's be frank, being part of one hell of a team.
Yeah, it's been great. It was something that I always wanted to do, to go to England and be part of a big club, and playing in the spring series and then a full season at Arsenal was a dream come true. I think after 18 months, it felt as though it was the right time to wrap up my time there. I feel like I fulfilled my dream and got the experience that I was looking for, and was able to contribute to the team and the club in a lot of ways. And looking forward to continuing my, relationship with Arsenal. And I'm, hope to be able to go back and always visit, and will always be a Gunner now. So I love that I was able to do that. But part of my journey was always to be able to be part of the North Carolina Courage, or want to be at least. And so when the team came back again last season was right when I was deciding to go to Arsenal. So I really hoped that, at the end of my career, that I would be able to be part of the North Carolina Courage. So that full circle experience has been a dream, and the transition has been great. I think that, I did live in London for a long time. I lived there for about a year and a half, so it was hard to leave. And, I lived right in the city, and, London compared to Chapel Hill, North Carolina is a little bit bigger and it's a little bit busier. And, there are things that I miss about London, like going to men's football games and being part of, such a big city in the world. So that was difficult to leave, but also, Chapel Hill is a special place to me, and the University of North Carolina means a lot to me as well. So I guess it's, life is always a trade-off. So it's been great to be back, and the Courage is, continuing to do amazing things this season. I'm really honored to be part of it. And if I can help this already great team be even better, I'm happy to do that.
Did it almost feel like the right time and a little bit of fate? Because if you'd been involved with the Courage maybe a few years ago when you were still involved with the national team, you're going to be there for a few weeks, then away for a camp, then back for a few weeks, then back for another international somewhere, traveling around. US internationals don't get as much time with their clubs as maybe players from other countries do. Now that you're retired from international football, you get that time at home, you get the opportunity to embed yourself in that organization. Did it almost feel like this was the right time and the best time possible?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. It's always good to be part of things from different perspectives. And my entire career has been split between club and country. And to now sort of wrap up that for countryside and just focus on your club, it's a different experience. I'm seeing the game from a different way. I saw that, when I went to Arsenal, and now I'm seeing that in my home community. And I think that it's important for some players to really focus on their club environments and really, have that as your number one priority, is in terms of growing it, growing the fan base, helping the team win. And I think when you're on the U.S. team, it's hard to split your attention in those two ways. So if I can help the club and help the NWSL now be stable, like in between the moments of World Cups and Olympics and national team players coming and going, I'm happy to do so. And, I think that you pointed to it, that it is nice to be home and actually home. It would have only been like being half home again if I was still splitting my time between club and country. But now I get to, really kind of be home in my community and, with my husband Dave and in my house, and still play the game and still contribute on the field as well. So it's pretty much a perfect setup for me, and I'm happy that it worked out.
It's not where you grew up, is it? You're from New Jersey originally, but you've talked about, and I know when you were in England, you talked a lot about North Carolina and Chapel Hill being home. Now that you're back and you see everything that's going on with the Courage, and you've been involved in the community, Does it feel any different to when you were there, you know, drifting between places and having to only be there almost part-time?
Well, North Carolina is kind of where I say that I've made my home. I, you know, when you're born and raised in a certain place, you don't really have much choice, do you, when you're a kid? But New Jersey certainly has my heart in terms of my roots and my development and my days as a youth soccer player. But Chapel Hill is where I've kind of chosen as an adult to make my home. And my husband Dave and I met at university there, and so we decided to move back. After traveling the world and living in New York, Boston, and all these big cities, we love University of North Carolina, we love Chapel Hill, so we've made that our home. And yeah, now it does feel like a little bit that, you know, we can really kind of go even deeper in terms of our connections in the community and making this someplace that we want to stay long term.
Because you bought a business there as well, didn't you? Do you want to give a little bit of insight for those that maybe don't know about it?
Oh yeah. So last year, one of the restaurants on the main street of downtown in Chapel Hill, which is very much attached to the university, was being sold. And this is a restaurant that had been in operation for about 100 years. It's called Carolina Coffee Shop. So it being sold was really sad for the community, and was the classic story of Main Street, you know, losing its independent shops and chain restaurants moving in. So we didn't like that. We had a problem with it. So together with a group of friends, we decided to keep a Carolina Coffee Shop alive. And now we are proud owners of Carolina Coffee Shop and have kept it alive and well. And you know, it's a fun side business and side project for me and my group of friends as we live our lives and our real jobs, but now we get to contribute to the community and the town by keeping this restaurant alive and well for students and local residents for a long time to come. So it's been a lot of fun. If you're in North Carolina, please check it out.
Well, I'm pretty sure I saw on social media a picture with some of your teammates. We should talk about them. We mentioned it a little minute ago. That team that you are in at the moment, Heyo, is, well, impressive to say the least. Already qualified for the postseason playoffs, already nailed down the NWSL Shield. Talk about the team that you've joined, talk about the team that you are part of, the environment, the atmosphere that Paul Riley has created within that side.
Well, anybody that knows me and knows my career knows, you know, most of the values that I have been built on is very much, you know, a USA mentality, a North Carolina mentality, which is be fitter than everybody, be harder working than everybody, be more positive than anybody, be more relentless in your 1v1s than anybody. And that's just sort of how I was born and raised. And that's how I see the separation between the best and those that are not quite there. And so for me to now join the Courage, it's very natural because this is like the epitome of what those qualities that I just spoke to. I think Paul Riley has had this core group of players for about 3 years now, and he's really developed a lot of these raw players into world-class players, and it's actually has been a really joy for me to see because, like I said, I've been part of hardworking teams in the past and positive teams in the past, fast teams in the past, but this team is just another level. It's really cool to see. Just everybody is very very good athletes, but also very good teammates. And I think that that's kind of what has separated the group. They're always going to be creating problems because they're just so fast and so talented to get in behind. So the chance creation is very high with players like Lynn Williams, Jess McDonald, Crystal Dunn, you know, quality attacking players. And Paul has been a wonderful motivator for the team and has a really nice balance of the team in terms of leadership with players like McCall Zerboni, you know, kind of leading the charge in terms of the heartbeat of the team. So it's been a lot of fun. Now it's just about ending the season the way that we want to. There's a little bit of a curse in the NWSL that if you know, nobody's been able to win the Shield, the regular season, and the championship. So we're looking to be the first team to do that. We're already 2-for-2 with trophies this season, which we're excited about, winning the ICC tournament and then a week later winning the Shield, or securing it anyways. And so we're looking to add that third trophy this season. Yeah, I think we have a good chance at it.
We'll talk about the ICC in a second. Were there any reservations about joining the Courage because that team is so good and because it's been so settled over the last 2 or 3 years, as you mentioned there? Were there any reservations about going there and being worried about getting game time, for example?
Yeah, I think that any player, any elite player wants to play on the field every single minute. But for me, it wasn't really a question. I really wanted to be home. I really wanted to be part of a winning organization. I'm sure that I could have, you know, gone to a lot of different teams and sort of a lot of teams were interested when they knew that I wanted to come back to the NWSL in terms of being part of their team. You know, I probably could have been on some teams and not come off the field for a minute. But you know, it was much more important to me to be able to contribute to an organization like the Courage. So certainly the Courage plays basically a 4-4-2 with a very interior midfield, which is not necessarily like my best formation as a pure out-and-out winger. So certainly that is, you know, kind of one of my reservations, rather, coming into this team. It's like, what would be my best position? Where would I find time? What would Paul Riley think that my, where would he think that my skills fell into the team? But at the end of the day, I think I can just add another weapon to the group, which I was happy to do, especially when the national team players weren't there, and able to lead the team in the ICC tournament was really meaningful for me. So yeah, it's all good. And the team is continuing to add layers. So if I can be another one of those layers, then that's a positive.
And the time that you're maybe not on the field, I know you are really a student of the game. You study it. You obviously watched a lot of men's games when you were over in England. I know that coaching is something that potentially is of interest to you. I know that it's very public that Arsenal offered you an opportunity to be an assistant coach there. Are you perhaps making the most of the time that you have maybe on the bench when you start on the bench or when you come off sometime during a game, of actually studying the game and maybe looking at it a little bit more differently?
I think so. I think that's a great question. I think more than anything, I'm kind of viewing this time, instead of sort of overlapping it with my next career, I am really trying to enjoy this time as being a player, as I know that, you know, you can only do this for so much of your life and your career. So instead of kind of thinking of it as two minds, I am very much trying to stay present as a footballer. But I think that, you know, and as you get older and as I start to think about my, you know, future steps in the game, I think that you just naturally become a little bit more aware of different coaching styles, the tactical adjustments, the personalities that you like, that you don't like, that coaches bring. So certainly I think organically I'm, you know, with every team and with every coach that you come across, you learn what you like, what you don't like, what, you know, speaks to you as a player. And yeah, I think the more and more you're exposed to, the more that you learn naturally.
Well, I've stayed away from it twice, having mentioned it already, but the ICC, I know that meant an awful lot to the Courage, even though it's only seen maybe as a friendly tournament. Obviously, it was a competition played in Miami between yourselves, PSG, Lyon, and Manchester City. You beat PSG in the semi-final and then went and beat Lyon. Not an easy thing to do by any means, especially with a number of players missing on US duty. Talk about that competition and talk about that goal that you scored against Lyon to win the final.
The ICC was so fun to be part of. I can't even talk about it without smiling so big, because for me going into it was certainly, it was exciting because I saw it as a U.S. versus Europe showdown, you know, and I know that it was only a preseason tournament for some of the European teams, but, you know, it's very, very rare that we get an opportunity for American club teams to play against European club teams. And now with my experience at Arsenal and being sort of on that side of things in terms of women's club football, I certainly had a new appreciation for what's going on in Europe. And, you know, like I said, it's unique that you ever get an opportunity for U.S. clubs to face off against European clubs. So this was as close as you get to a club World Cup, I would say. And for us to take care of business against PSG and then Lyon, which is highly regarded as the best team in women's club football, was so fun. It was such a thrill. And we did it with a very depleted roster, which made it even more rewarding. So it was a lot of fun. I hope the ACC tournament continues to grow. I think everything about the the tournament itself was well done. I think the crowd suffered in terms of attendance, but hopefully the tournament becomes more and more, you know, widely visible, and we can get more fans out to the games. But I think the teams were treated well, and it was a really great tournament. So we're thrilled, and obviously for, you know, the Courage to be able to, you know, have an argument that we are the best club team in the world now, I think is fair to at least consider. So we're really proud of that.
How did your teammates find it? Because you had a taste of playing against European clubs when you were at Arsenal. I know that you had some pre-season friendlies against German opposition. You obviously played a full WSL season plus the Spring Series FA Cup. We'll talk about that in a minute. But how did your teammates find it? Because for some of them, they are likely to not have come up against opposition like that before.
Yeah, I think that the players found it to be a lot of fun and really challenging. I think that the team was blown away by Lyon, to be honest. And I think that if you ask people on the team, they would pretty much unanimously say that Lyon was the best club team that we've ever faced and that they've ever faced as individuals. I mean, the way that they knocked the ball around us, especially in the second half, we were chasing our tails quite a bit, but still able to win at the end was great. The level of professionalism and talent from all the teams was definitely very respected. I think that there was a little bit of a swagger on the U.S. side that said, you know, even though, you know, there's a lot of talk about these European clubs putting a lot of money into their women's sides and these teams being so great now, for the North Carolina Courage to still win the tournament was kind of a little bit of a one for the U.S. column in terms of a little bit of a bragging rights. So although I think that we experienced the growth of the game and seeing it with our own eyes and these rookie players seeing it with their own eyes and on the field against this world-class talent, there's still a little bit of a, like I said, a little bit of bragging rights that although we faced that, we still were able to win and feel good about that.
I know the ICC have said that they would like to continue this and maybe expand it in, certainly from next year, if not next year, future years. How would you like to come up against Arsenal at some point?
Oh, I love it. I would love it so much. I think that I know that they were considering it. That would be so much fun to be able to host Arsenal in the US, and that would be a dream to see the current team play against Arsenal. It would be a lot of fun, so I hope that comes true. Fingers crossed.
Well, I know you have Arsenal. They hold a close place in your heart. You talked a little bit about the time that you had there, but now that you've had a bit of time back in the United States, you spent 18 months at Arsenal. You had the Spring Series, the WSL, FA Cup, Continental Cup. How do you sum up and reflect your time at Arsenal?
I would say that my time there was really special in terms of being part of a big club, in terms of, you know, training at the facility with the men's team all the time was special. To be able to meet Arsene Wenger was incredible. To be able to go to all the games and visit these famous stadiums was an extraordinary experience for me. I think, although I loved my experience, I think it did demonstrate to me, how do I say it? I guess my Americanness in a good way, in terms of things that I missed about America, in terms of maybe the camaraderie of the teams, in terms of this little bit of like, there's a little bit of a work hard, play hard mentality in America that, you know, sort of enjoys hard work and has fun working hard and things like that. And I would say that like the attitude that I experienced was very much more professional in Europe, but maybe not as joyful, I would say, in terms of what I've experienced in the U.S. So I would say that, you know, I'm so happy with my experience at Arsenal. I hope to go back lots and enjoy the games and hope to work with the club in the future on different initiatives. But sometimes it takes you someplace else to realize how special your home is. And I think that that's kind of coming back again to the U.S., sort of what I appreciate about the NWSL and appreciate about American soccer is this another level of a work hard, play hard mentality that loves competing, that loves trying to win. And, you know, that's that's kind of how I've grown up. Like, I mean, I've grown up in American soccer. This has like been my family. So I guess it would be sort of like returning to your family after a long vacation. That's sort of what it feels like.
Was it a bit of a shock when you took to the field in your first game? You're so used to having played a certain way in a league and then with your national team, to come over to Europe and play in England with a team of multinationals, lots of different nationalities at Arsenal, but not just at Arsenal, lots of different nationalities in some of the other teams as well. How did you find that adjustment?
I think that I saw the whole thing as almost like an experiment, as almost an experience for me to see how these different cultures mesh, how they play together. It was really interesting. I think I had a new appreciation for possession and build-up football and patient style of play. That would be a little bit what I guess would stand out to me the most. Another thing that stood out to me is that, you know, fitness and training hard and stuff like that, like that's something that we associate with being in the U.S. But I know that my Arsenal teammates were fit players, and I think I undervalued and underappreciated how far along England has come. They certainly are not too far off from the American mentality in terms of conditioning and fitness and things like that.
Because you got an insight, didn't you, not just into the club game in England, but you got a good insight into the national team because you did some media work for one of the broadcasters over here, didn't you, Channel 4, during the European Championships in 2017. How did you find that experience? Because it was different, wasn't it? It gave you a different perspective of the game and had to give you an opportunity to almost express an analytical side of your football brain.
Yeah, I think that it was a good and challenging experience for me to be part of Channel 4's broadcast of the European Championships. I think it was good for me to be part of a big tournament where the U.S. wasn't involved, sort of as my first time doing a big tournament, just because I think that there's obviously an emotional side to watching your former team and your national team. So it was sort of good for me to, you know, be doing the broadcast for the Euros without having the U.S. involved. But I could definitely see the growth in, you know, so many of these teams, like the Netherlands, like Spain, like England. Certainly they're not off by far in terms of what I experienced at the U.S. national team. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. It's something that I will continue to pursue. I think that, you know, I love being on the field and I love being a player still. You know, I do that for so long, but that broadcast media career might be something in the near future that I pursue.
Well, one of your last games for Arsenal was the Women's FA Cup final. Now, I know the result didn't go your way. Of course, it was a defeat to Chelsea, but it gave you an opportunity to go back to the scene of where you won 2012 Olympic gold. Take the result out of the equation. How did you feel about that in terms of the build-up, in terms of the match day itself, and being a part of an occasion like that?
The FA Cup was one of the best experiences of my time over in England. Yeah, again, like, it wasn't great for the team. Personally, I came off the bench in about the 60th minute, so I would have liked to have started the match, and I would have liked to, of course, won the match. But Chelsea, to be fair, played outstanding and, quite frankly, were probably a more quality side than us that game and most of the season. So hats off to them, as they put on a fantastic campaign. But the experience itself was a complete spectacle. I think I saw sort of the pride of English football in terms of getting 45,000 people to Wembley. The game day experience for everybody was top notch. You know, everybody in England knows the FA Cup and appreciates its presence in the sports landscape there in the country. So because America sort of has so many different sports and so many different interests, and, you know, people really rally for the World Cup, but it's hard to get them to pay attention to much more than that. For me to be part of the FA Cup, where the entire country sort of knows about who's playing and what's at stake, was really cool. And I think, you know, we beat the former crowd attendance, so that was a positive step for me, not only as a player, but sort of as an ambassador for the sport and the game. So I was really proud of that. And certainly maybe now I'll be, you know, on the other side and being one of those spectators for the FA Cup in years to come.
Do you think there'd be any appetite for a similar sort of competition in the United States? Obviously, on the men's side, you have MLS and you have the US Cup. on the women's side, you have the league, but you don't have a cup competition. Would there be, in your mind, any appetite for something like that?
I think so. I think in America, you know, we love that kind of win or go home sort of mentality. So I think that could be cool. I mean, right now we only have, you know, 9 teams in the NWSL, so it would be sort of difficult to have sort of an open cup experience. But perhaps in the future, yeah, there is room for it. It would be nice to add some more trophy hunts to the season and give a little bit more competitions and more value to games and results mattering. So, yeah, I think that's a good idea, and maybe in time moving forward. But I think priority for me would be more of the ICC kind of tournament or Club World Cup. For me, that's a little bit cooler and a little bit sexier than having an open cup in the U.S. for women's football at this point, just because I'm so intrigued by the showdown, like I said, of Europe and U.S. clubs.
So you mentioned there the American mentality of win or go home, and that is something that very much applies to the U.S. women's national team. Now, we're going to talk about a game that you chose to bring under the spotlight, and I will explain that in a moment. But now that you're not part of it, how do you view the U.S. women's national team as it is at the moment? We're not far away from the Women's World Cup. Of course, the team has to go through qualification this autumn. But based on what you're able to see and what you're able to watch, what do you make of Jill Ellis's side and the makeup of that roster?
I think that, you know, U.S. is still number one in FIFA rankings. I think that going into the World Cup, things are becoming a little bit more clear in terms of the player pool. I know that they certainly expanded it quite a bit and got a good look at a lot of players, you know, as they should. I think that never in the history of the program has it ever been a question of, okay, this year's for development is not for winning. And I don't want that to ever become normal for the U.S. team. Every competition, including the Olympics, including, you know, qualifying, including World Cups, every tournament, the U.S. team should want to win, and that should be the goal. You know, U.S. has always found a way to develop and win. There was some talk that maybe 2016 was sort of a developmental year, and that was the start of the cycle to prepare for the World Cup. And if that's the case, we're 3 years into the cycle now, and things should be becoming much more clear for the coaching staff, and they, you know, should be nearly ready with their preparations for France. I think it's getting there. I think the team seems to be coming together in terms of their identity, and every time that you lose a core group of players like myself and Abby Wambach and Shannon Box and Lauren Holiday and, you know, so many players, Lori Klepney, that had been there for a long time, there's certainly going to be a bit of a transition period. And I think it's been long enough now that the new crop of players has come forward. And I've loved seeing players like Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan and Tobin Heath step up into leadership roles, because these are my peers and these are players that I grew up with. So there's a lot of pride for me to be able to see them now carrying the torch and leading the team. I think that they have a really good chance of winning in France, and I will be cheering them on every step of the way.
Well, I mentioned earlier the feature as part of every podcast that I'll be doing with my interviewees, and that is bringing a match of significance under the spotlight. Every player will be asked to pick a game that was significant in their career for some reason. Now, Heyo, you chose 2004 Olympics semi-final, in which the United States beat Germany 2-1 in overtime. Now, you started that game on the bench. You were a 19-year-old, still at the University of North Carolina. You were subbed in for Lindsay Tarpley in the 75th minute, and you scored the winner in the 99th minute. So tell me, might sound a dumb question based on that intro, but tell me why you picked this game out of all the matches in your long career that you could have picked.
I picked this game to shine a spotlight on because I really do feel like it was a pivotal moment in my career and in my life, being able to score that goal. Because, you know, as a young player, obviously I was one of the last picks on that team. I think I was probably the last person to make the roster of 18. Obviously, it's a very small roster. I was a young player, only 19 years old. And I was on that team with a bunch of my idols. I mean, Mia Hamm, Brandi Chastain, Christine Lilly. These were women that I really admired and looked up to. And now to be able to suit up next to them was an extraordinary honor to even make the team. And then to be, you know, in the mix as a player that was expected to contribute and to change games by coming off the bench was a huge opportunity for me. And in particular, in that game, shortly after being inserted into the match, which was a back and forth total bloodbath between U.S. and Germany. I mean, this was the days of Birgit Prinz being top of her game and the Germans just firing on all cylinders. So my teammates were exhausted, and I'm inserted into the game and, you know, being expected to change it. And shortly after, I was sent in on a wonderful through ball by Allie Wagner, beat the goalkeeper, and all I really had to do was slide it home. I was on my left foot, and I basically choked and missed. I remember it being on my left foot, and I hit it off the post, and it dinged out of bounds for a goal kick. It was really like an opportunity to put the game away, and I remember missing it. I remember going back to midfield to set up for the ensuing goal kick and sort of looking over at Abby, who was my strike partner at the time, and her just kind of shaking her head in disbelief that I missed it. And I was kind of expecting her to say, like, no worries, buddy, like, next one or something positive. And nothing came out of Abby because she's exhausted. And, you know, it should have been a finish. And I remember having this moment of sort of like self-belief check in myself that I was there for a reason. Nobody's going to baby me. Nobody's going to do it for me. Nobody, you know, is going to boost me up in this moment. It was up to myself to sort of shake off the mistake and sort of get back out there again. And I remember that I did that, and I did it well, because only a few minutes later, Mia Hamm, who obviously is, you know, one of my friends now but idols then, got to the end line and slipped one back that I was able to then finish. So it's a special game for me because I was a young player who had a strong mentality and who proved that they belonged and who proved that I was the right choice to not only make that team but to come into the game. And for me to be able to send that group of players, that core group of players that really put women's football on the map, to send them into the final, which of course we went on to win gold, was a huge accomplishment for me, a huge personal accomplishment, and something that I remember for a long time. So that's the game I wanted to put on the spotlight. It was a special one for me. It was a special goal with a lot of special players. And like I said, I almost blew it, but I came back and showed a lot of resilience and a strong mentality and was able to send us into the final. So I'm proud of that.
Because it was a five-minute gap, wasn't it? I think you hit the post in the 94th minute and then scored the goal in the 99th. In that five-minute period, you mentioned there the reaction of Abby, the fact that she was exhausted, the fact that you almost had to almost deal with that situation, that split second, on your own. Was it one of those where in your head you're thinking, I desperately want another chance and I want it quickly? Or was there a part of you that was thinking, I don't want to get too involved because I don't want to mess up again. I don't want to make sure that that's me again.
Well, I think that these are all kinds of things that, you know, sports psychologists would probably have a lot of different opinions on. But I think that most importantly, I just focused on forgetting about the mistake and going to the next play. It's always the next play, the next play, the next play. And I think that if you start to get too ahead of yourself by like, oh, and you want to make up for it in a big way, or you need to like, you know, prove people or anything like that, I think that that's where you maybe try too hard and get a lot of tension in front of the net. But if you just focus on good habits and the next play, you know, good things will happen. So that's why I was certainly proud of myself in that position as a young player, to be able to have that poise and be able to shake off a miss and just focus on doing the right thing at the next moment.
Can you remember what the instruction was from April Heinrichs when she put you on in the 75th? I'm asking you to rack your brain, seriously, I know, but can you remember what she said to you when you were going on, why it was at that moment that she decided to throw you into the game?
You know, especially as a young player, there wasn't a lot of information, a lot of tactical information. I think that likely the information sent in with me was just go create energy and raise the energy level on the field. They just wanted me to be myself, which at 19-year-old Heyo was basically running around like crazy and creating havoc and boosting up the team when they were exhausted. So I think that that was likely that the information was just go provide energy and hope to change the match. So that's what I did.
Because it must have been quite weird. I think I looked at the attendance. It was just over 5,000. It would have been a crowd probably largely neutral, but if there was going to be any sway because of the location in Greece, it probably would have been more German. That must have been a strange feeling, because I know that you wouldn't have had many caps or many experiences of international football, but when you had, it probably would have been in front of larger crowds in the US. Did you have to motivate yourself a little bit more because of that? Because usually it's a crowd that will get behind you and motivate you, whereas that crowd didn't exist in that match.
Well, I remember hearing the women talk about, like, the crowds being small in Athens, but I think as a young player, I didn't even really notice or care, you know, what the crowds were like. And, you know, I had enough nerves already just being part of an Olympic team and playing with some of these players that I had posters of in my walls, you know, that I didn't need, you know, a big crowd to certainly motivate me. But yeah, I do remember, like, now thinking back, like, we could see our family and friends group, you know, wearing red, white, and blue, and hearing them, seeing signs, stuff like that. It was a very intimate atmosphere, to say the least. So I remember it being small, but I don't remember it affecting me in any kind of way.
How do you think your career might have been different if you'd lost that match?
That's a good question. I definitely think that if I wasn't able to perform as a young player and shake off that mistake, and maybe if I wasn't able to contribute that goal, you know, you don't want to be doomsday about it and think that that would have changed the trajectory. But I definitely think that I proved my worth a little bit, and I think that that goal offered comfort to the national team staff that their investment in me was appropriate, and their investment for the future, that, because they knew that I could produce in pressure situations, that they knew that I had digged to a big tournament and had, you know, I knew now what it took, and I was able to contribute to a winning team. I think that they knew that I had a winning mentality and a competitive mentality that could help the team in the future. I think that it was a big boost for me. I think, you know, it's hard to say if I would have been included in future tournaments, but I definitely think that that was a big goal for me to score at that point.
Well, brilliant memories, Heyo, and a gold medal to finish that one off. Other gold medals, a World Cup as well. I really, really appreciate you giving me your time, and I wish you well for the rest of the season with the North Carolina Courage and whatever comes ahead of you over the next year or two.
Thank you, Kieran. I appreciate it, and I'm as happy to be on.
So many thanks there to Heyo for her enthusiastic and energetic insight. I look forward to seeing her continue to inspire those who look up to her, and hope to one day see her coaching on the sidelines. Don't forget to check out some of our other podcasts at audioboom.com/channel/football spotlight, where you can hear from the likes of Jackie Gronin, Dagny Brynjarsdottir, Matt Beard, and this from Ali Wagner.
I said, look, I want to go overseas and learn from some men's coaches and men's teams, and I want to be involved in the men's game. I love it. And if men can be involved in the women's game, this is after the 2015 World Cup. If you have Alexi Lawless sitting at the desk, why can't a woman be doing the same for men's if they know their stuff and they do their work?
Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for giving this podcast your time. Do please tell people about us on social media and spread the word. You can find us on Twitter on @FootballSpotlight. But for now, on this episode, it's time to dim the spotlight and say goodbye.